And the first time they played, Oklahoma beat them like 30 points. So Oklahoma just didn't show up. Oh, you're right. That one three-pointer where he ran into the guy and he's trying to get loose. He said, oh, heck, he jumped up and sunk a three-pointer. But the guy was all over it. It was painful. Should I shut up and remind me of the third class?
It ain't a whole lot to talk about today. So we'll talk about it. 16 verses. 16 verses, yeah.
3 minutes a verse.
Yeah, 3 minutes a verse. Yeah, sometimes that's not too easy.
Nope.
I heard a kid talk for 5 minutes on Jesus Wept this weekend, last weekend. Yeah, he did a pretty decent job. So. All right, so today we're going to conclude the study on Samuel. This is it. Next week we're going to start Jeremiah. So, anyways. So today's topic is Samuel summoned from the dead. 1 Samuel 25:1, and we're going to pick up in 28:3-18. These are pictures of the wildflowers in the meadow that I call my yard. It was like brown, and all of a sudden last week it rained, and it's like, so the yard's just full of flowers right now. So anyways, when and if I get a chance to mow it, I'll mow it. So anywho, those are little flowers. You can find them everywhere right now. They're a little white and a little purple, but anyways, they're pretty neat. All right, 1 Samuel 25:1. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. So Samuel blank, fill in the blank. Wow, it's pretty plain on that, isn't it? But there's no fanfare to it. It bothers me the media does that kind of stuff. Elvis dies. Whoever. It's always anyways. The headlines are just such and such died. Can't they do better than that? But they don't. That's right here. Samuel was a great leader. All he gets is he died. So how'd he die? Yes, that's what we know.
Yeah, his brain stopped functioning.
Yeah, he just died.
He stopped breathing.
His
heart died.
It doesn't say any more than that. Why? Who knows? He fulfilled his mission for God, did it faithfully, and he died. If Samuel dies in 1 Samuel 25, why do you think they call this next book 2 Samuel? That's my question. But, if he dies here, why do they call the next book 2 Samuel, right? And you'd almost think that he wrote the book since it's Samuel. But he didn't, apparently. There's a whole lot more. So, anyhow. The teenagers may be coming in here, and they may not. Matt was going to go to East Orange, so he was going to try to get somebody to teach in there. And I said if he couldn't teach, because Nick's sick, so he's going to feel. Anyways, I don't know. Yeah, so if you see teenagers come in here, we'll try to incorporate them. The best answer I can find on the whole Samuel thing, according to Wikipedia, the fountain of all knowledge, Samuel was a single book and divided into two sections, as was Kings, due to the convenient length of scrolls. These books together were called the Books of the Kingdom. So that was basically their interpretation. The Holman Bible Dictionary says the group with Joshua and Judges, they formed a Deuteronomistic history. There's a word that even spell check said was right, showing how the teaching of Deuteronomy worked itself into the history of God's people. So this is, they're grouped together, reading what it said in Wikipedia. Basically, Kings was so long, they split it in half at some point, and they probably did the same thing with Samuel and just split it in half. It became 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings. Hey, Chronicles, yeah, I've been part of that too. So anyways, that's the how and why, lost long ago. It is what it is, and it's been that way for a long time, but it's just been known as 1 and 2 Samuel. So do you think Samuel was buried inside his house or on his property? Because it says they buried him in his house at Ramah. Do you think they actually buried him in the house?
Question
in it.
There's a lot of people got buried in that.
tuned out all the time.
Yeah, and there was somebody, and I forget who it was, that they said he was buried in his house in one thing, and something else says he was buried in the garden. So is it just on his property? It probably doesn't matter. And like you said, the original Hebrew would have probably gave you a better insight to that. It's also a good insight. Coffin's commentary says that the burial of a dead body in Samuel's house would have made the place ceremonially unclean in perpetuity. In the light of these reasons, we believe that Samuel was buried in the garden or in the courtyard of his residence. So, and I don't want Jewish customs how they are with dead bodies and stuff. That kind of makes sense too, that if they actually buried him in his house, it wouldn't be much more than just a big tomb. And that's how it would. So, anyways, doesn't really matter. Just something that was a little side note I threw in there. So how did the nation of Israel react to the loss of Samuel? I've got all kinds of words missing in my things today. So how did the nation of Israel react to the loss of Samuel?
They mourned.
They should, right?
They also assembled.
Yeah, it looks like they assembled. You're right, probably at Ramah. That would make sense too. It is. You see that with Israel. They assemble. They do. When Saul was chosen king, they assembled everybody. I find the same thing. It's amazing that a country, even as small as Israel is, they brought everybody together and assembled. You know, in the time of when they crossed the Red Sea, what was there, a million of them? Yeah. So it's got to have grown since then. But to bring that many people together for anything is crazy. But that's what they seem to have done time and time again, is they assemble. So anyways, they're mourning him. Samuel's been a spiritual leader his whole life. We started looking at him in the beginning of this study. He was probably 3 when his mom handed him over to Eli. He served as a prophet. He served as a judge. He was the spiritual leader of Israel until the time that Israel said, "We need a king." God said, "Go ahead and do it. It's me and they don't like, not you." But he was still an advisor. He was still the pathway to God. It was through Samuel. So rightfully so, they mourned him. We can understand that. We mourn leaders when they pass. We've seen presidents pass away long after they're president. Last time we lost an active president was 50 years ago. It was before my time, but I know people still talk about that. The loss of a leader affects everybody. An effective leader touches a lot of lives. So they mourned him. They assembled and mourned him.
They're mourning because of the regret that they realized they had something good.
Sure.
Now yeah. They finally did it. And now they finally miss him.
Yeah, they do. They miss him. Like I said, they may not have always listened to him, but they know who he was and what he did. So yeah, May morning. That seems appropriate. Do you think David and Saul suffered an even greater loss than Israel did? I think so. How come? What kind of loss did they suffer? Yeah. You're probably right. Saul and Samuel had a solid relationship. That was Saul's way to talk to God. Samuel anointed Saul king. He was there through it. In today's lesson, you'll see. He doesn't have access anymore, so he's missing that. David, at this point, David's been anointed. You covered that last week, is that right? Yeah, so David's been anointed. There's not a whole lot on David and Samuel. There's, Yeah, he had respect for him. There's a place in there too that David and Samuel have some time together, And what kind of doors were open at that time? I don't know. Saul becomes his anointed king. There's a time where it appears Samuel pulls him aside and shares the word of God with him. This is what God wants. So sometimes that's just enough. Just enough words. I know I get that. I get that here sometimes. I'll get a word or two here and there, kind of make a bigger picture. Doors are open sometimes. I get that at work. I work with Dad long enough that I get these little pieces, you know. That's how things work sometimes. So what he got, he's going to have to carry him. I got that from Camille's dad. He passed away 3 months after we got married. So I got a lifetime worth of advice in very short bits on how to live with and love his daughter that he loved so much. So I have to carry that with me still today. And that's how it goes, you know. I can't get any better than that. So, anywho. So, yeah, they suffered probably a bigger loss than the nation as a whole. So, jumping up to 1 Samuel 28, we're going to pick up in verse 3. And the first part of verse 3 says, "Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had mourned for him and buried him in Ramah, his own city." So, why do you think Samuel's death is restated 3 chapters after it happened? Okay. New chapter in the history of Israel. So they just bring it up again because it kind of sets the ground for that. In case you forgot. Yeah. So yeah, whatever happened in the other 3 chapters there. But like I say, it kind of starts a new path here. And it does. It sets up a new thing with Saul. Narrator repeats the fact that Samuel was dead and had been buried in Ramah to make the point that Saul had no legitimate source of guidance in the face of the massive Philistine invasion.
This is probably the beginning of Saul going crazy.
Yeah, pretty much. Saul declines pretty quick from here. I think he passes away 3 chapters from now. It's all longer. He lasts. That's what today's lesson is with the witch or the medium. Second part of 28:3, and Saul had put the mediums and the necromancers out of the land. So my question is, why do you think Saul kicked out all the mediums? Well, those are people who communicate with the dead, and the necromancers. You call them wizards, witches, magicians. Why did he put all these people out of Israel? Could be. I got 2 verses there. Exodus 22:18, "You shall not permit a sorceress to live." And Leviticus 19:31, "Do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Do not seek them out." Yeah, so make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. So what do you think? Why do you get rid of these people?
I think at this point he was scared to death and he didn't want to know the truth and he's afraid they might tell him the truth.
That could be. That could be. And he might have been, there's a possibility he's actually following God's word. At the time that he got rid of them, because it doesn't really say when he got rid of them, but he got rid of them, he might have been following what God had wanted. That's true too. It wouldn't have happened if God didn't want it to. There's things that happen though God doesn't want them to, but it sets the stage for what does happen. But yeah, even the fact that those guys, people were going to them, whether or not they can spread rumors, they can, like you said, the truth can come out in odd ways. So they could have been a threat to Saul the same way. But regardless, he put them out of the land, and it is in accordance with God's word that they're not supposed to, Israel shouldn't consult them. Later in today's text, he consults a medium. So how does this jive with the law of land? So anyways, he's going to go to a medium, or like you say, the Witch of Endor. That's usually what she's called. How does this jive with God's law? And the king's law. Because the king, as king, he got rid of them. God's law says you shouldn't consult them, but he's going to. Chuck?
afraid, and God won't talk to him, and he's looking for somebody to talk to him.
Yeah, he enforces God's law, but when he needs it more than that, he's in the point where he feels he can change it. So yeah, he's afraid. And like you said, we find that he's backed into a corner. Verse 4, Philistines assembled and came and encamped at Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel, and they encamped at Gilboa. Again, we're going to see that they assemble all of Israel. From Robert D. Bergen's commentary on 1 and 2 Samuel and the New American Commentary, it says Shunem was located on a hill next to the Via Maris, the major trade route passing through the Promised Land. Philistines desired to control this region, which included the Valley of Jezreel. To oppose the Philistines, Saul gathered all the Israelites and set up the camp of Gilboa, likely a mountain just south of Shunem, that overlooked the Via Maris and the Valley of Jezreel, and through it which it passed. From this vantage point, Saul could view the Philistine troop movements in relative safety. So anyways, that's kind of a description. I could have put a map on there, but that map kind of tells you. The Philistines were one place. He assembled all of Israel on top of a mountain so he could watch them and figure out what to do. 1 Samuel 28:5. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid and his heart trembled greatly. So on top of this mountain, what did he see? Whole bunch. The Philistines, as long as Samuel was alive, stayed out. They were free from that threat as long as Samuel. Yeah, it gets worse. I got one sentence up there, I swear, it has 10 words with the letter S in it. But as long as Samuel was alive, the Philistines stayed out. But now it looks like Samuel's dead and they're ready to strike. So that's what he sees. How'd it make him feel? Said there's not a whole lot in this lesson. He's got to be afraid. He's got to be... Yeah, terrified is a good word. It says his heart trembled greatly. That's pretty scared. That's pretty scared if you feel it through your body, feel it through your soul, and that's where he's at. Yeah. You're right. He's pretty sure God. He's pretty sure. Yeah. Later on, he's real sure. You're right. At this point, regardless of what he's done, he has to know God's in control. He has to know that God's protected him. God makes things happen. And he's like I said, if God's with him, he knows the battle will be nothing. But he really doesn't have that sense that God's going to take care of things. So, and it's beyond his control. There's nothing, he can do his best, but it's really the outcome of it is beyond his control. No, he's never gone up against them. Yeah. They're big people, and they've got steel, as far as I understand. They've got the steel that nobody else really seems to have. The Philistines have been bad news clear through Judges. They were bad news in Joshua. They continue to be bad news. They might have been outside the borders now for 70, 80 years, but that story's still there. People still know.
Well, wasn't most of the other times that they clashed with the Philistines, God saved them?
Yeah, all through Joshua.
And right now, Saul has no idea whether or not God's going to help him.
He has no clue. You don't want to go into battle without God. Sure. Without Samuel, without God, it's just not there. Pick it up, verse 6. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by prophets. Does it make sense to you that Saul would seek God's will at a time like this? He hasn't really been seeking God's will. The problem that he had with not listening to what God wanted to do is what got him in trouble and took away his kingdom. Like Chuck pointed out earlier, kind of does it when it's convenient.
There's no atheists in the foxhole.
That's true. That's true. Along that same lines, they said they can't take prayer out of school as long as they have tests. So, same kind of thing. Yeah, that's where he's at. He knows God, and he knows he's got nowhere else to turn. Does God answer him? No. It says, not by dreams, not by a Urim, not by prophets that I put in there. How strange that the man who hated and persecuted the prophets, Samuel and David, expected to be answered by prophets. That he who had slain 85 priests with all their wives and children, including even the high priest, expected to be answered by the Urim. That he had sinned away the Spirit of God, expected to be answered by heavenly dreams. God is not mocked. That's from Matthew Henry's commentary. You know what the Urim is? We know what prophets are. We know what dreams are. Urim's like a breastplate of the high priest, and it divines, I guess, the truth, divine spirits. Something they had, and he wasn't getting any information anyhow. But when you look at this history of how he treated God's prophets, I can understand that. Fair enough. But that's where he turns. Does it seem like Saul viewed God as a safety net rather than a lifeline, consulting him and only when facing a situation that seemed impossibly beyond his own control? Last resort. Does it seem that way? It does. It seems like God wasn't good enough for him to go to for guidance the whole way, but when it comes right down to it, he got nowhere else to go. So he uses them that way. What can this teach us about our own prayers? Put it in terms of what we need to know today. He doesn't have to. You're right. It's true. Don't assume that God's going to do what you ask him to do, especially with a history of, I really don't care.
I think the right attitude is, no matter what, God knows best. God knows best.
Yeah, God knows best.
I guess a little bit of perspective. Saul kind of had a view of things like, God is here from academia.
Yeah. His perspective is all wrong. You're right. That's his view. God's here to serve me rather than me to serve him. And that's what he's down to. He just, God needs to do this for me.
It's almost like he put God into the statue, like this statue does.
Yeah, but we find that. And I know we find that in our own lives sometimes. It's easy to spot it in the lives of others when they look for God to bail them out of the toughest situation. People who live their own lives for years try to make it right with God, try to make a deal with God at the last minute when things get desperate.
What if what God called righteous, they admitted their sins? Not that they did right all the time, but they admitted their sins.
Sure. That's true.
He's not a dead man.
No, you're right. It's only listed in yellow. It's not listed in white of back here of all the stuff that he did. That he's not the one saying, hey, I did all this stuff and I was absolutely wrong. But it's easy to find yourself in that position. It's easy for others to find themselves in that position, wanting and desiring God, even though they had no use for him up to that point. Verse 7, then Saul said to his servants, seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, behold, there's a medium at Endor. So when Saul can't get an answer from God, where does he turn? Late night TV, he watches the ad, he calls that 888 number, right? This is what happens.
Endor.
It does, doesn't it? That's Lord of the Ring, or Star Wars. Star Wars, that's where the Ewoks are, right? Endor. Lord of the Rings, it's Mordor. So, but it's same kind of thing. It'll all go. A lot of fantasy, a lot of sci-fi. Still goes back, believe it or not. The Bible and the gospel set up a lot of themes for that kind of stuff. But yeah. So he didn't get an answer from God, so he's going to seek out somebody who can talk to dead people. So, we talked about this earlier, but just as a reminder, that's illegal. It's illegal by the law of the king. He's the king. He kicked out all the mediums. He kicked out all the necromancers. It's illegal by God. Do not go to these people looking for answers. Look to me for answers. So, this is illegal. He knows it. He's been a part of that. This is no secret to him, but that's where he goes anywhere. What does Saul's willingness to consult a medium teach us about common behavior of people? Christians and non-Christians alike, to engage in behavior they know is wrong. How often do we see that? I know it's wrong, but... Sure. He's at the point he wants to talk to God, and he's justifying it that this may be the only way I can get a hold of God. There's a good one too. That's pretty common too. Yeah. Chase answers till you hear what you want to hear. Chuck?
He's gone all the way where, at the point where some people could say, I know it's wrong for everyone else, but in this situation, I'm justified in doing what I'm doing. So I think he's gotten all the way to that point where he says, it's okay because I had to do it because it doesn't really matter what God's word says because of the situation. And it comes to self in that situation.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a rationalization.
Rationalization. He's looked for that path out is what he's looked for. And he saw something, went with it. It wasn't like he had thoughtfully chosen a path. He said it. He shows he's human.
We justify
things
we want to do.
We do. Absolutely. We will justify that any and every time. And Christians, non-Christians alike, we will justify that. We will make bad choices due to the desperation of the situation. Sometimes it's just habits. Sometimes I'm okay doing this because of this. What can Christians do to guard against resorting to sinful behavior like this during times of crisis? And three things that are listed in the book, but I went ahead and put them: embezzlement, alcoholism, pornography. Yeah, but there are people who, I'm in such a crisis and the money was there and it ain't hurting anybody. I went ahead and took it. One day the boys pointed out to me that the little cup full of change in my truck was just asking for crackheads to break in and steal it. Whopping $5 for the change in my truck. So, you know, $5 doesn't tempt me to do anything. But I got $5. But it is to somebody. By the way, they have never, ever taken a quarter out of that little cup of change, even though it's right there, and they've never touched it, they've never thought about it. But there's some that's too much temptation. So, I've heard of people stealing the tip jars off the counters at like Dunkin' Donuts, and stuff like that. How much do you think a tip jar at Dunkin' Donuts would have?
Okay, I worked with
it. Yeah, the little jar where you're making donations to somebody's... Oh, okay. But it's... They justified it. I needed to pay rent. I don't have milk for my kids because of my drug and alcohol problem. But, you know, there's that kind of thing. You can justify it. Alcoholism. People I know who are alcoholics, ask them when they finally get to the root of why they're alcoholics. It's to wash away something in their past, to wash away that memory, to get rid of how they were treated. It doesn't fix the problem, but it seems to be justified that I can push that off till tomorrow. Pornography is the same way. It's easy. Today with the internet, it's easier than ever. It's just right there. But there's a lot of ways that we can resort to sinful behavior. Sure, sins of flesh, sins of the eyes. The lust of the flesh pulls a long ways. And it's times of crisis. Yeah. And we can use that crisis level as justification of, I wouldn't have done it except I had to. Verse 8, so Saul disguised himself and put on other garments and went, he and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night, and he said, divine for me by a spirit, and bring up for me whomever I shall name to you. So how does Saul approach the medium at Endor, and why does he do it that way? He's got a hood on. He's got a secret costume. He probably did not dress up like a clown, a Teletubby, Spider-Man. But yeah, he's got a costume on, trying to hide who he is. He doesn't want to be noticed. Sure. Yeah, you're right. He was head and shoulders above everybody else in the nation. Yeah, that's a little hard to hide who you are. That's a good point. You can hunch over all you want.
I'm here for information.
But no.
It was at night.
It was at night. That seems to be a theme throughout the Bible. And they go at night when they don't want to be recognized. They don't want anybody else to see them going. He went at night. Yeah. Yeah, going to visit a witch is probably spooky enough. Visiting her at night, yeah, I'd say that's probably even spookier. Unannounced, I mean, I don't think the neon sign was flashing. Open, stop in, palms red, 5 denarii. You know, it wasn't going on like that. So he just comes in there late at night, 2 guys with him, unannounced. I mean, there's nobody with the trumpets and stuff. Here's the king, you know. This is really... Yeah, because she's doing illegal stuff too.
Well, like I said, usually, you know, even though Saul flip-flops, she should be
pulling this way. Yeah, and she could have, that's a good point. She knows, if she's still in the business, which apparently she's still in the business, she has to be watching over her shoulder.
If he's in his right mind, he should be putting that business out.
Sure. And he probably wouldn't just go by himself. Yeah, they're henchmen. They're not as big as he is, probably, but. He comes unannounced. So it's all kind of clandestine, but you can see all kinds of possibilities with it. What's he tell her to do? He doesn't really ask her. No, he didn't ask at all. What's he tell her he needs her to do? Yeah, bring up for me whoever I name. Why didn't he name it on the spot? The other illegal activity that goes on, like here in this town, I'm sure people that seek out the drug dealer in the middle of the night don't say, hey, I need drugs. I'll tell you what I need, and you got to supply it to me. It's probably they're just saying, I'm looking for this or that. Yeah. He just gives it away. It gives it away immediately. Yeah. I want you to bring up Samuel. Ain't nobody here looking for Samuel except one guy. The guy who would need him the most. Right. It's probably just still some of the same thing. Hiding what it really is. Hiding the truth in darkness. Covering it up. Verse 9, the woman said to him, "Surely you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the necromancers from the land. Why then are you laying a trap for my life to bring about my death?" She is scared. Think she recognizes him? Or do you think she just...
Well, Saul, when Saul says something to kill the witch, he doesn't have to go himself.
He doesn't have to go himself? He doesn't even... He doesn't even have to knock. You know, quite honestly. He's not going to send a drone, but you know, he could... But he could have done other things, right? It wouldn't take too much. He wants her out of business. There's other ways to put her out of business. He doesn't need just to go to the door. But yeah, you can see that she's already identified. Maybe she's not in the business anymore, and she's saying, "No, I'm not coming out." Maybe she recognizes him. She's not too immediately pressed into doing what he told her she needs to do. Verse 10, "But Saul swore to her by the Lord, 'As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing.'" Sure. He's not either, though, right? That's pretty, yeah. Well, look at his comment there. "As the Lord lives, I swear you're not going to be hurt for breaking God's law. I swear I'm not here to cause any trouble. I swear by the God I don't really follow anymore."
Yeah, trust me.
Trust me. I'm in trouble, too.
The God that hasn't spoken to me in a while.
Yeah, God hasn't spoken to me, so I thought I'd go out here in the middle of the night and go to an illegal business and see if maybe he's just hanging out here. Yeah, it's when you break it down, it's like it seems a lot like the Sanhedrin and stuff when they charge Jesus. I mean, he broke the commands. They break 5 commandments in order to kill Jesus because he's a threat to them, and they're worried about what he did. He eats with tax collectors. You know, he says he's the Son of God, which it was not even a crime because he was the Son of God. They never looked into that, but they break all kinds of commands just to get him. To me, it's the same kind of voices, and it probably is. Like you said, you talk about the hand operating it. I mean, you talk about the hand, but I mean, even the puppet. What's puppeting him? It's not God. Where have we heard a response similar to this? "You shall not surely die." That's what he says, right? Genesis 3, the serpent tells Eve this. "You won't die. You surely will not die." And that's what he's telling her. This is clearly not the words of God. But verse 11, "And the woman said, 'Whom shall I bring up for you?' He said, 'Bring up Samuel for me.'" So with the great assurance from Saul, however hokey it seems, how does business proceed? Let's get to it. What can I get you? Do you like it? It's like fries with that? Yeah. This is no different than business today. I mean, you go down to Burger King, McDonald's. What can I get you? You want fries with that? Yeah. It's the same thing. Yeah, and that gets to be a question too. Well, yeah, he tells her, "What I want. I want Samuel. Bring him up." Her response, verse 12, "When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman said to Saul, 'Why have you deceived me? You are Saul.'" How do you think the medium felt when Samuel appeared? And part of that question is, what do you think made her know that was Samuel? She'd been there in the assemblies and stuff. Yeah. On a side note, the text doesn't really say that she made him appear. It just says he appeared. So it could be from the fact that Samuel appears. It could be for other reasons. which we'll get into. But she's dead sure that that's Samuel. Because she's dead sure that that's Samuel, she's dead sure that that's Saul that's asked for him. Verse 13 to 14, the king said to her, "Do not be afraid. What do you see?" The woman said to Saul, "I see a God coming up out of the earth." He said to her, "What is his appearance?" And she said, "An old man is coming up and he's wrapped in a robe." And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed his face to the ground and paid homage. How did the medium describe what she saw? And how is Saul sure that she sees Samuel? I told you I had a sentence with 10 S's in it.
So apparently Samuel, Saul doesn't see it.
She sees it, but yeah, not Saul doesn't see Samuel, she sees Samuel. This is crazy. It'd be even better in Hebrew, right? Yeah, she sees an old man in a robe. Drive through town at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, you'll see all kinds of old men in a robe.
Yeah,
that
could have been me.
It could have been.
Go to Walmart.
Go to Walmart late at night. It could be this. Yeah, I mean, she says it's an old man in a robe. Anyways. Yeah. It was more than just some old guy. Yeah, she was sure.
Well, the NIV said she saw a spirit, so she doesn't see a God, she saw a spirit.
Okay. Spirit.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. She's been faking it up to this point. I'm going to ask this question a couple more times in the next 3 minutes, but do you think it's really Samuel, or do you think it's a vengeful trick? God wouldn't, yeah. There's that piece of evidence. You're right, it is debated. Yeah. And that's one of the pieces of evidence, is that God wouldn't allow that to happen. Satan's powerful. He's, yeah. And I can't. Yeah. When you see some of the words that sound like stuff Satan would say in order to get his way. I've looked at some of the evidence. I can't tell you which is right. And I'm just putting it out there so you guys can even see some of the hard places. Is it really Samuel? Is it not? The words ring true either way. Verse 15, then Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" Saul answered, "I'm in great distress, for the Philistines are warring against me, and God has turned away from me and answers me no more, either by prophets or by dreams. Therefore I have summoned you to tell me what I should do." So Samuel starts talking directly to Saul. He asks him, "Why have you brought me up?" We know Saul didn't have the ability to raise the dead. So, yeah. Don't know. And like I said, the same question. If she knew it was Saul from the start, if she had vengeance on him, it could be a trick. Just words from her. Or it could be God sending Samuel to reinforce what, you know, I shut you out before. What do I have to do to tell you we're done? Verses 16 through 19, we'll finish this up. And Samuel said, "Why then do you ask me, since the Lord has turned from you and become your enemy? The Lord has done to you as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand, given it to your neighbor David. Because you did not obey the voice of the Lord, did not carry out his fierce wrath against Amalek, therefore the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will give Israel also with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons shall be with me. And the Lord will give the army of Israel also to the hand of the Philistines." It could be. It might be Samuel, because it actually reinforces what Samuel said when he's alive.
Well, the point is, God doesn't have to follow what he said.
Yeah. And it might also. And it might also be words that everybody there knew. They already knew. I don't know. So yeah, I can see both sides, and I. Yeah, isn't it tricky that way? So either way, it happens. All right. Saul's behavior on this occasion illustrates that individuals who know the truth can and sometimes do act contrary to it. Additionally, it depicts the way some attempt to use God during moments of crisis. Although Christians have that wonderful ability to rely on God in prayer, it's not to be addressed only in times of need. Prayer should also be used to express our thanksgiving, ask for God's blessings, to commune with God. All right, that's the end of our study on Samuel. Even whether it was or not Samuel, that was still the end of it. So we're going to go into Jeremiah next, starting next week. The life of Jeremiah, known as a weeping prophet, is intricately interwoven with the historical events occurring around him and often depicted in living parables and lessons. One quarter will not allow sufficient time to cover the book of Jeremiah, but its focus on two themes, tragedy and hope, make the studying meaningful. So for the next 13 weeks, starting with Chuck next week, we're going to look at tragedy and hope via Jeremiah. It does not go into Lamentations, it's just Jeremiah. So anyways, next week, Jeremiah 1:1-19, the call of the prophet. So hope to see you.